Relationships. As humans, we're hardwired for them. What would it be like to have a guide to relationships that are authentic? Tap into the collective wisdom of teachers, authors, and healers who have accumulated experience on this subject. I've learned that there are overlapping soul circles of people in our lives. Family of choice. Welcome to the family.
Welcome to the next year of It's All About Relationships. It's now 2016, and I'm so excited to have our guest on tonight. Before we do that, I wanted to let you know about our music that leads us into and will lead us out of the show. It's called Only You, and it was written by my friends Rick Danzine and Deborah Lee of Lyra Project. And my guest is somebody that I met a few months ago at Celebrate Your Life Conference in Phoenix, of which Vivid Life was a sponsor. And he's somebody that I had not heard of before. So I'm excited that we had the opportunity to meet then and that he's on my show now. His name is Chris Grasso, and he is a really powerful speaker. His presence, I mean, you know when he's in the room. You can tell when Chris is in the room from his visible presence, a multiply tattooed, multiply body-pierced young gentleman. And he's also a really compelling speaker, and he has a story to share that just blew me out of the water. He's a recovering addict, and he'll tell us how many years clean he has right now. He's a really spiritual, not just talking the talk, but walking the walk spiritually. And he wrote a book that I'm holding right here called Everything Mind, and the subheading is What I've Learned About Hard Knocks, Spiritual Awakening, and the Mind-Blowing Truth of It All. So welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, Edie, thanks for having me on, and thank you very much for the kind words. Definitely appreciated.
My pleasure. One of the things that I was just blown away about when you did your presentation in Phoenix was that your mom called during the workshop. Do you remember that?
And she texted me, right.
And then I
took that as an opportunity to call her. That was so much fun. I'd never been able to do that. Well, the opportunity had never presented itself when I've done a workshop before, but it was so cool to do that with you guys. What a good time.
Yeah, and you held up the phone and you said, everybody say, hi, Mom, and we all, hi, Mom.
Yeah, that's, when I do my workshops, there's always like certain practices I want to try to make sure I fit in, but other than that, I go into it and really without a schedule or an agenda, I try to be organic. So when something like that comes up, you know, we can jump on it, or, you know, I just like it to be a very fun and hopefully very meaningful and healing experience for people. And sometimes you get to listen to me call my mom on speakerphone in the middle. So there you go.
Yeah, well, I tell you that it was incredibly healing for me. I mean, yours was. I went to a number of the workshops, and yours really touched me for so many reasons. And you call yourself an indie spiritualist. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, you know, so I guess that that was actually the name of my website first, that later became the title of my first book. And really, all that's saying is it's someone that really honors their heart's calling, and not just in regards to spirituality, but in life in general. A lot of people see me, and as you mentioned in the introduction, I am very heavily tattooed, and I like punk rock and hardcore music and metal and hip-hop, and so a lot of people automatically associate that with what an indie spiritualist is, but it has nothing to do with that at all. Really, you could be a suit-wearing person that works on Wall Street. Essentially, if you're honoring your heart's calling, that's the indie spirituals. That's the person that's really tuning in. And like I tell people, you can read books and listen to teachers, and that's all wonderful because they can be tremendous guides. But at the end of the day, no one will know what your truth is except for you. You're the one who's in your own skin. You're the one who knows what your heart's telling you. So that's in a nutshell what an indie spiritualist is.
Mm-hmm. So is it kind of one from column A, one from column B, and sampling from all of the whatever you perceive that to be?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say so. I kind of am personally into more of the interspirituality, interfaith way of approaching spirituality, but I know some friends that are Buddhists, for example, that one of them, she got an indie spiritualist tattoo. So, because again, if you're honoring your heart's calling and it tells you, well, I'm going to study Vedanta and that's my path, or Taoism is my path, or mystic Christianity, whatever the case may be, or none of them, you know, if it is drawing from column A or column B, like you said, at the end of the day, it's really whatever your calling is and honoring that with a very sincere and discerning mind and heart.
Mm-hmm. So how do we live with an everything mind?
good question. So, I mean, that's the title of my second book. And you know, everything mind, the reason that was a really important book for me to write is, as it's very important for me to convey in my workshops, is that everything that's going on in our lives is part of our spiritual path. At least in my experience, that's the case. And for many of the teachers and mentors I've learned from, you know, that's what they say as well. And so taking that into consideration, that includes our triumphs and our heartbreaks and our joys and suffering, the light and the dark. These all become equally suitable teachers and lessons. And, you know, that's really profound when we're able to begin to approach life with that openness to all of it, literally all of it. And I appreciate there's a Zen Buddhist teacher who's very dear to my heart. His name is Thich Nhat Hanh. And he's famously quoted as saying, no mud, no lotus. And what that means to me is that our best selves can grow out of the most difficult times in our lives. You know, the times that are trying when we're experiencing pain. So as we begin to live our lives from this place of everything mind, which again brings everything to our spiritual path, it allows us to learn to compassionately work with and through basically whatever life hands us, whether it's good or bad, and doing so with an open and courageous heart and mind.
So is it also about not judging whether something is good or bad? It just is.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the root of a lot of different wisdom traditions will say that, you know, leaving that aside and just accepting what is in the moment, not saying that if it's bad and there's something that can be done about it that you don't do it, but yes, it is what it is. That's one of my favorite sayings. Or Eckhart Tolle, he says something to the effect of accept everything in your life as though you invited it, or something to that effect. And again, not saying that if there's something you can do about it to change it, don't do it. Yeah, go and do it. But what is in this moment is in this moment, and it is what it is. Pain becomes suffering when we push it away and we don't allow it. You know, we don't accept it.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many people that have experienced trauma and wounds that I've worked with in my therapeutic practice. And to say it is what it is, how did you invite this, isn't always the most compassionate thing, but ultimately, you know, it may feel like the truth. You say, okay, yes, this happened, and it sucks, and it's horrible, and it's painful, and now what? Now how can we walk through this together and walk through the fire together? Now, on the other side of the break, which we're going to take in a moment, I'd love to hear more about how you walked through the fire and survived it. I know you have a website. It's is it theindiespiritualist.com, I believe?
Yeah,
and what will people find there?
Well, they can find links to my social media pages, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, plenty of other interviews I have done, little links to articles, events I have coming up, a whole smorgasbord of goodies over there.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. I visited the website a couple of times, and folks, I encourage you strongly, strongly to get this book. I don't know what the cover is like, but it's textured. I don't know if there's a particular name for that kind of.
I don't know.
I don't even know what
name
to call it.
Right, the Indie Spirituals cover. It was the material is called Grit, and everything
Grit,
mine is similar but different. And I don't.
Yeah.
Know the exact name of it, but it is it's a really neat feel. I'm psyched on how Sounds True did with all of it. The whole layout is I think they did a great job.
Oh, it's beautiful, and you can almost pet the book cover. It's like, oh, it's got, you know, it's got a feel. It's not flat. It jumps up off the, you know, off the textured. So, folks, again, it's called Everything Mine. My guest is Chris Grasso. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, and I welcome you back after the break. Catch you on the other side.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
It's All About Relationships is a gathering of friends worldwide. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein. Join us each Thursday night from 8 to 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. My guests are dynamic leaders in the field of human interaction, and no topic is off the table, from sexuality to spirituality to self-love. I'm a best-selling author, speaker, therapist, interfaith minister, and optimistic who sees the world through the eyes of possibility. Visit me at opti-mystical.com.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
Welcome back to the next portion of It's All About Relationships. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, and my guest is author Chris Grasso, who wrote the book called Everything Mind, What I've Learned About Hard Knocks, Spiritual Awakening, and the Mind-Blowing Truth of It All. So, Chris, you went through a lot of walking through the fire and the hard knocks and maybe came out a little bit singed. Can you share about your addiction and recovery process?
Yeah, it's not to be cliche, but it's still obviously a daily reprieve, you know. How to condense it, you know, but about 12 years ago, maybe a little more. I was in my first detox in 2004. I'd ended up there after just years of using, I'm going to say successfully, which isn't the right word, but I was a functioning addict. I think that's a better way of saying it. I was able to maintain jobs and I was in bands touring, but things just spiraled out of control, ended up in that detox. And from there I went into a 28-day inpatient rehab program and then into a halfway house that I lived in for a few months. And then from there into a sober house and was doing meetings, got a sponsor, all of that, you know, the things you're suggested to do in recovery. And then moved out into my own apartment. And it was a little over a year that I suffered my first relapse, actually on a trip to Rome. And that was in 2005. And my life, again, this is just very condensed for, you know, I know we have limited time, but so I'll just say to condense it, that the next several years of my life became a pretty vicious cycle of that, of ending up in either a detox, emergency room, jail cell, psych hospital, and then beginning the process of getting clean over, getting sober. And usually I would get clean for at least a year because I've always really wanted sobriety, but inevitably I would start to pull away. I'm definitely a very introverted person by nature, which is weird because I can turn it on, let's say, when I have to do a workshop or whatever. But when I'm home, you know, a lot of the times I'm not going out and I'm reading and just relaxing and with my family and whatnot. But so I mention that, though, because a big part of why I would relapse is I wasn't reaching out to people and I wasn't, staying connected with a particular fellowship. I'm not advocating one over the other, just, you know, some kind of support in general. And so that was that was kind of the cycle that I went through for many, many years. It was like 4.5 years ago that I hit pretty much the worst rock bottom I'd ever hit, and things turned around for me significantly then. And here I am today. I mean, life's still not perfect. Like, today I didn't drink or drug, I actually ate pretty healthy, but I still will catch myself sometimes acting out in ways like eating unhealthy or overeating or, you know, this way or that way. I'm far from perfect, which I try to make abundantly clear in my books and my workshops and whatnot. So it's always weird for me, you know, to talk about, like, how long have you been clean, this or that. It's like, well, you know, from drugs and alcohol today, but I still drink coffee and I still, you know, do eat unhealthy food sometimes. And so that's, you know, like I said, it's a daily reprieve. And I'm grateful, though, today that I do show up for myself and my family and my loved ones and others, you know, whomever I could be of support to. So, again, very, very much nutshell condensed version, but hopefully that conveyed a bit of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the truth that I found for myself being in recovery, you know, as a workaholic and codependent, is that we're all addicted to something. I call it an attempt to fill the hole in the soul. You know, there's something missing that we look to self-medicate with. And, we try to fill up a bucket that has a hole in the bottom and keeps leaking out. And no matter what we do, it may not feel filled. But feeling fulfilled within ourselves might be a key to that. So one of the things you wrote about in your book is you believe that you deserve to suffer. Have you gotten past that, the belief that you deserve to suffer?
For the most part, yes. I experienced something last year that was very, very difficult. And I kind of watched myself fall back into this old pattern of feeling like that. But it was interesting because it was actually just a month or so before Everything Mind came out. And it was really almost surreal to watch myself have to put these practices that I write about in the book and ones that I've used quite often. That's why I wrote about them, because they're so meaningful to me. But really, really put them into practice during this very, very difficult time in my life. But no, for the most part, it's wonderful. Like, not saying life's wonderful, but it's wonderful that it's so much better today. You know, I think I talk about in the book, or maybe I talked about in the workshop you attended, that there were times where I could have like only one small mirror in my bathroom. And other than that, I didn't want any mirrors hanging or pictures that were framed, because I did not want to see my reflection in them. Or if I was walking into a store that had glass doors, I would look down, because that's how deep my self-loathing ran. I couldn't stand to see myself. But today, most of the time, that's not an issue. Sometimes I catch it pop up, and you know, then I recognize that as a call to go a little deeper with, you know, whatever practice I'm working with at the time. But yes, it is so much better today than it used to be. And I do attribute that truly to a lot of the teachings I've learned from the great wisdom traditions and practices such as meditation, loving kindness, and so forth.
Perfect. Well, there was a dramatic story that you told in the workshop, and it's in your book, that had to do with when you're in your active addiction. Can you share about that? And maybe it's I have to tell folks real briefly. It might be a trigger for you, so take a deep breath. But it is a pretty powerful story.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that quick warning, because it is.
Sure.
But I think it speaks volumes to what we can do as humans when we put our mind to it, you know, as far as recovery and getting through difficult times. But yeah, as I shared at the workshop you're at, it was, several years ago, I was at my parents' house, and sometimes my mom and I will talk about my experience, or our experience, I should say, when I was actively using, because it's definitely a family disease. But we do so in the spirit of healing and catharsis and so I'm glad to do that with her. But there was this one occasion she shared a story with me that had happened a few years prior to us sitting in the living room talking that day. And it was one that I had no idea had happened because I was in a blackout state. But so she told me about this time I was, you know, there blacked out. And when I say there, I apologize. I was at my parents' house blacked out. And
well,
okay, thanks. So I was blacked basically blackout drunk from drinking. And earlier that day, I refilled a prescription to Klonopin, and my parents knew that I had, and they also knew I had a very bad habit of mixing the two, which is terrible to do. It kills a lot of people. And anyway, so my dad went into my bag when I was in a different room and confiscated the pills because they didn't want me to take them. And so at some point I went to get them, realized they weren't there. And so I freaked out, and I, in my blackout state, I decided to go into their kitchen and pull out a large steak knife, and I walked out into their driveway and held it to my throat and, you know, told them if they didn't give me the pills back that I was going to kill myself. And that's, you know, even in this moment, this is so hard for me to talk about because, you know, I put my parents through that. That's a memory that they have to live with for the rest of their lives. But, you know, it's one of those things I can't change. So I just have to work with it in my own practice. But so my parents, they gave me the pills back and I took off, and they found me several hours later, just completely out of my mind on a grassy knoll in the area they live. It's kind of a rural area in Connecticut. So they brought me to the emergency room, and that, you know, thus began another one of my experiences going through withdrawals and detox and rehab, et cetera. But I share that in the context, in the workshop and the books, because it's kind of sets up a practice that I ended up using after she told me that, which I'll just share very, very quickly, even more abridged than I usually share. And it's one that's inspired, again, to talk about Thich Nhat Hanh. I was listening to a Dharma talk he gave in the car one day, and he simply said something to the effect of holding your pain, painful feelings, thoughts, emotions, things like that, in the way a mother would hold a newborn baby. And so I had been kind of, that really struck me. It just went right to my heart center. So as time went on, I caught myself starting to do that. And then I sort of made my own practice out of it, which I used after my mom told me that story. I'd been using it up to that point, but never on anything this big. And so after she told me that, I excused myself from the room. I did not want to let her see that her telling me that hurt me, because I didn't want to cause her any more hurt. But so I excused myself, went up to my bedroom. And essentially what I did was I allowed all of these terrible feelings and thoughts, you know, because I had a lot of the self-denigrating thoughts coming in, and I just allowed them to come up. But I did so from a place of witnessing them rather than feeding into them, which can be difficult. That's why it's a practice. But I did that, and that's the first part of the practice, really just let it all run its course. And then I did what Thich Nhat Hanh talks about, and I imagined myself taking this pain and these hurtful words and wrapping them in a blanket and holding them to my chest like a mother would a newborn baby, and just being there, caring for them, because our usual reaction to them as human beings is to try to push that stuff away, and naturally so, because it's the human condition, you know, it's part of our survival instinct, not wanting to feel pain, even emotional pain. But, you know, when we do that, that's where the shadow material comes from that Jung talks about and other great teachers. It's our repressed emotions and thoughts, and that stuff goes all the way back to our childhood. But so this is a way to kind of flip the script on that and be there with it. And, you know, so mentally, I just said to them, I don't remember exactly, but, you know, something to the effect of that I recognize you're there, and I'm sorry, you know, that you're hurting in the way that you are. But I'm here to be with you with a completely open mind and open heart, with loving kindness and compassion for as long as you need. And it took about half an hour. Usually with that practice, it's a minute or less for the feelings to kind of dissipate. What happens for me usually is the blanket in my mind kind of falls in on itself as I feel this release happen. But that was a particularly difficult experience to work with, so it took longer. But that's when people ask me what's an important practice you use, that's the one I like to talk to the most, because I've personally found the greatest benefit from that. So sorry to kind of go on I couldn't really share the story without the practice. So there you go.
No. Absolutely. And we did this in the workshop, and I've done it since then, and it's an exercise in self-compassion and self-love, so bless you for that.
Yeah.
Chris, I'm going to ask you a question that we're now asking this year. And folks, as you're listening to Chris's answer, I encourage you to think about your own, and you can go to Facebook / Vivid Life. this question yourself. And the question is, what does your vivid life look like?
That's a good question. And actually, Shane, I know Shane's doing, like you just said, this really wonderful program with Vivid Life. And I responded to him there, but I know he's looking, he's using kind of more tweetable portions. So I figured I would just share the whole thing I wrote for him. It's not very long, but I know
sure.
you had to cut some of it out. But this part of this I wrote in my book, Everything Mind, and I elaborated a little on it for this. But so what I thought of when he asked that, this is immediately what came to mind, was this section I'd written and again elaborated on. So I just wrote, right here, right now, I am that I am, just as you are that you are, unbounded and absolutely brilliant beings, beings whom no identity could ever confine. Remember yourself, take a deep conscious breath, and own the infinitely incredible being that you truly are, and I promise to do the same. And as we breathe in, may we do so as if it were our last breath, because in this moment it is. How absolutely perfect. So that's what I'd written, and that's really what came to mind for me, is just being in that place, like when they say namaste, the interconnectedness of all things, the beauty in that, that there really is no division, that it is all one, just the lila, the dance. It's a beautiful way to experience life. That's a vivid life to me.
Oh, absolutely. And I got goosebumps when I heard it. Goosebumps are my truth barometer. So thank you so much, Chris. And, you know, and
thank
again,
you,
folks,
Andy.
Oh, my pleasure. And folks, if you're inspired, again, go to Facebook.com/Vivid, V-I-V-I-D, capital L for life, L-I-F-E.me, and submit your stories. Could be tweetables, could be a little longer like Chris's, but let it come from your heart, let it come from your imagination. And once again, folks, go to Chris's website, the Indie, spiritualist.com, and you can learn about all things everything mind everything. Yeah, you can learn about all kinds of things and pick up the book. And the name of your first book, people want to
Indie
get
Spiritualist.
That.
Yeah.
Okay, the Indie Spiritualist is the first book.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And,
it was so great to meet you in Phoenix, and thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, my pleasure. And folks, next week, if you want to hear even more juice, listen in. My guest is Lyric Benson Ferguson, and she's the author of a book called French Kissing God. And if you like the poetry of Rumi and Hafiz, you will love Lyric's book. And I'll tell you about the amazing cosmic coincidental story that led to our actually connecting. So until next week, I thank you, I bless you, I love you. Namaste.
Only you can finally make it happen and find what really matters to you.
It's All About Relationships is a gathering of friends worldwide. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein. Join us each Thursday night from 8 to 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. My guests are dynamic leaders in the field of human interaction, and no topic is off the table, from sexuality to spirituality to self-love. I'm a best-selling author, speaker, therapist, interfaith minister, and optimistic who sees the world through the eyes of possibility. Visit me at opti-mystical.com.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.